And welcome to Earth Riot Radio. I'm Reverend Billy here in, where am I? New York City. And this is brought to you by the Stop Shopping Choir. Last night, we had eight of us took the stage at the Jones Beach Musical Theater, which is on the beach, and a lovely, you know, grasslands and dunes and the sand and the surf. And the surf was, well, very dramatic because Hurricane Aaron was blowing in the waves, and we took the stage as it was approaching high tide. So let me set the scene. We're on the stage about 6 feet in the air, and then there's a 50-yard wide, pretty long, wide concrete area between us and this kind of brutalist bleacher system where 14,000 people were sitting. And you know, that middle area, that turned into a moat because the high tide with the hurricane leaked into the ocean water, came between us and the audience, so we had a kind of lake there. At the height of our show, in come scores of spiraling, soaring seagulls, as if right on time for the script of a biblical miracle, and the people were cheering these gulls, or perhaps they were cheering us for having trained the gulls to do this. I'd like to dedicate the next half hour to this beautiful ecosystem, the North Atlantic. Are you ready? Here we go. Somebody join me. Earth-luyah!
Earth-luyah!
Migration is underway. Song and seabirds are returning to Long Island shores from distant skies.
They come from Central South America, Florida. They come to Long Island.
Among them, terns. Smaller cousins of the seagull, they nest on marshes and shores away from beach crowds. Wildlife conservationists from the nonprofit SeaTuck have been monitoring terns for decades.
The prognosis is not good.
Last year, their marsh cameras captured the tern's summer home completely underwater.
We found that they've completely abandoned this site that they've been using since 1995. So as sea level rise gets worse, flooding events get worse, and their nests actually just get completely flooded out.
But the primary concern is really sea level rise. There's no place for these natural areas to retreat to. They'll be extinguished.
New York's coastal sea level has risen almost a foot in the last 100 years, and researchers project another 1 to 2 feet by mid-century. Add in more frequent storms, and not only seabirds are losing habitat, diamondback terrapins, which come ashore to lay eggs, are also losing ground.
And the floodwaters will actually drown the eggs. The eggs must be dry to incubate and to hatch.
Here at the Turtle Rescue of the Hamptons, experts don't think it's any coincidence that 85% of the intakes are female.
On a higher temperature, which the sand usually is when there's severe weather, the gender will lean towards female. And you know there's no population with just females, so it is affecting the terrapin population drastically.
SeaTuck conservationists are not only sounding the alarm, but also seeking solutions.
Each of us in our lifestyle can make choices that minimize impacts upon the planet. There is no planet B. This is the only planet we have.
And now a conversation with Leonard Peltier. Most of you know Leonard's story, 49 years in maximum federal prison, a political prisoner, never tied to the crimes he was supposed to have committed, but a member of the American Indian Movement and a holder of so much experience, so much wisdom, and a wisdom sharer, as you'll find soon. Because we have questions from this time as he emerges in his new freedom. We have questions about the poisoning of our earth at this moment in our history. Leonard Peltier.
You know, if we're allowed to handle our own affairs, and we're allowed to handle our own schools and stuff that we've been doing for the last at least 30 years or so, 40 years, our kids are coming out of there more educated and we'll be able to really help the future of our nations, of our culture. So I'm very, very proud of these kids. I'm shocked, really. After being locked in that cell and coming out and seeing it. Because you don't hear them. I heard stuff, but now you don't. When you get to see it, man, it's really, wow. I come here, when I left here, we were still living in log cabins, no running water, no nothing. It's a business on the reservation that was a bar. Today, there's all kinds of developments, business developments that we got right downtown now, and it's amazing. We got just about everything anybody else has. Prices are a little high, but you got it.
That's good to hear. I don't know if you saw the kids coming down the Klamath River on the kayaks, you know, when they finally undammed the river and they took like a 6 or 7 week journey.
I didn't get a chance to see it, but I know about it. Yes.
It was just very beautiful to see them emerging from the mouth of the river into the ocean and the elders there to greet them and so many tribes there from all up and down that river. And it was really, for me, it was like, I just thought, you know, sometimes...
It's unbelievable. For me, it's unbelievable. Yeah, for me, because remember, I lived right in the middle of it. When I was just a little bitty guy, I was born in 1944. When I was just a little bitty guy, we had to have a pass to go leave the reservation, which is right on the border, or to the town right on the border of our reservation, to go camping. Yeah, and then you usually had to pay for it. You know, I mean, they built asylums, insanity asylums, if we did not deny our language or our culture. They literally built them and put people in. Wow. People in. The President of the United States, after numerous proof of the corruption that was going on there and everything else, closed them down. That's not true. Why did the President close them down? You know, and not Congress and stuff like this. So those places existed.
Did you have any native peoples that crossed your path in your 49 years in prison?
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that the prisons they put you in were far away from the Dakotas.
Yeah.
You know, they wouldn't let you be in a prison close to home.
Oh, against the law, my dad.
Did that mean that you didn't get visits from your family as much?
No. One of the things that, well, I got to tell you this. When I was convicted and I sat there at the desk, I'm telling you, I was infuriated because I just went through a year of total corruption in the courts, international courts and everything. And I seen the violation so obvious, would sicken a decent human being or whatever. And so did my people. They seen it. They didn't cause a riot in Canada because of some of the stuff they were putting up there, and that was totally lies and illegal. And the people that was there said, "That's not true. I lived there. That's not true." And the judge tried to clear the courtroom, and they threw one pregnant girl, young girl, on the floor, and it caused a riot. Anyway, we had to go through all the things like that there, and
I'm sorry. Maybe I brought up some dark things there.
No, it's not dark. It's just...
It's so amazing that you're here and walking among us. You've been out now 6 months almost.
Yep. Almost 6 months. I'm just starting to feel freedom. People have really taken care of me. Everything I got is bought by people's donations. They bought me a house. And then the tribe did come in and renovate it, helped the workers, came in, worked for, paid, painted it, and built certain parts of it, whatever needed to be rebuilt. They come in to help me put in a garden. We put it in a little late, so I grew up to a great. It's an experience. Next year, we'll make a good garden out of it. Oh, I'm very grateful. And then the people come up and give me they come in to help donate furniture and stuff like that. They're coming and giving gifts and food. Jeez, I got more food than I know what to do with. I'm starting to gain weight.
But your health is coming back.
Yes. When I got here, when I walked out of prison, I walked out of using a walker because I couldn't walk myself. And today I'm not using even a cane. I can't go too long of a distance, but the point is I can walk without a cane now. And I'm starting to feel better. There's a few problems that I still need to be taken care of. We're kind of concerned because we don't know all these things are taken away from Medicare and stuff like this, or how much is going to involve us Native people. We're very concerned about that. Then if that happens, I don't know how I'm going to take care of some of my medical problems. I'm hoping I can be able to sell some of my art.
A lot of people don't know that you're an accomplished painter. Is there somewhere people can go look at your paintings? Or
I have a new, they're putting up a new website for me just strictly for that. My son, Chauncey, had saved over 80 some paintings, and I didn't know he did that, because I had told him, if you need money, sell them, whatever. But he'd been putting them away, and other people have done the same thing. I just got one back that I painted in 1986, and somebody else saved it for me and sent them back. So I'm getting some of the paintings back like that. And we're looking for getting promises from certain people that are going to help me set up an art show. And I got prints to some of my paintings. So prints are they're beautiful too. If you frame them and hang them up, they're very nice. Plus, they're valuable.
I hope you don't have to work too hard at that, because you know, you've done the work, I think, right, already.
I also, well, the people are telling me that. They're telling me, you know, I made a big sacrifice. Then if you look at all my writing, all my statements and everything, it never was just about Leonard Peltier. I spoke about the culture, the violation that
yes.
had. I mean, I didn't, I from day one, when from Canada, when I got up and made a statement there, I got up there and I was, my statement was very militant. And that probably didn't help me anyway. Yeah. But here's the thing that happened. Canada was not going to release me. See, let me tell people, too, that why do people think I ran to Canada? No. That's not the that's not what happened. We got indicted, four of us, and we didn't know why did we need to single out four of us, right? Me, okay, I found out later on that the snitch, Doug Durham, put a hit on me through Congress, claiming that I was the next future generation of the most militant leader in the American Indian movement, that, that should be I should be confirmed. They should be concerned about me. This is in a church committee, church hearings. Anyway, so they put this indictment against us. We didn't understand why we're reading, why we're reading indicted, you know. And so we sat around with my elders and all this other thing, and we sat around discussing it. One guy wasn't even in the state, Jimmy Eagle. He got indicted. And my co-defendants went to trial first, by the way, and they got found by an all-white Christian jury, not guilty by reasons of self-defense. Because we were able to tell the people and show evidence, testimony from witnesses and everything else, what was really going on there. What was really going on there in the 1970s? Over 62 people found by the church committee were murdered there. These were AIM supporters, old people, you know, sympathetic to the movement and stuff like this here, right? They found 62 murders, and then their funding was cut off, so they couldn't, they had to stop their investigation. My co-defendants were able to prove what was actually going on. What I heard later was that the reason they got a fair trial was because they went before this judge called Fast Eddie, who had a reputation of sending Indian people through his courts, bang, 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 and they were, next thing they were in prison. And they gave him the nickname Fast Eddie. Well, apparently what we heard later through our investigations and stuff, the wife of the judge told him, I want you to give those Indians a fair trial. I want to know what's going on over there. And also his daughter. So the judge allowed in an enormous amount of evidence of what
evidence
of what was going on there. And the jury came back not guilty of reasons of self-defense. So anyway, prior to that, we didn't know why we got indicted. So they were recommended by my elders, this, look, there's a treaty between the United States and Canada. Anytime a native goes over and asks for help, Canada has to help, vice versa. And it's already been proven here in America that some judges have done that. When Native people came from Canada and asked for help, there's cases now up there. We're talking about recent. We're not talking 500 years ago. So when I go over there, there's no evidence. So the judge over there was very conservative with my dad, who wanted to send me back because he did a whole lot of stuff that was illegal too. And he said, I can't send him back. There ain't no evidence. So they created evidence. We found out, well, the witness they had created, they used her affidavits to which was, man, it was so horrible that even that judge said, I cannot use this. This is not real. Mm. This is not a real affidavit.
Yeah.
So, that's the reason I went to Canada. But we found out a lot of evidence and everything. But I tried to come back to go to trial with my co-defendants, but they wouldn't let me come back. So found evidence later where they said put the full weight of the American government on Leonard Peltier. The government needs a conviction. When they say that, you don't got no rights. Right. You got none. I mean, they wouldn't let me cross-examine. I'll be going to court here pretty quick. I'm trying to get this because I'm still in prison. I'm just in a home environment. And I'm restricted to hot movements and everything like this. That's a lot better. It's a million times better than that cell, though. Yeah. But nevertheless, we're gonna go file an appeal to try to get the total exoneration here in the next week or two. So,
wow.
But we've been preparing it. It should be a lot easier now that I'm out of prison.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so.
Hello, welcome to News from the Natural World. I'm Savitri D. A recent review published in Frontiers in Public Health, analyzing more than 500 studies, found that a substantial body of scientific research has reported genetic damage from wireless radiation exposure in both humans and animals. Over half of the studies showing DNA damage found impacts at wireless exposure levels below the safety limits of most countries. Sensitivity to genetic damage varied by cell type, with reproductive cells, testicular, sperm, and ovarian, and brain cells appearing especially vulnerable. Studies suggest that oxidative stress and free radical production may be among the key pathways through which wireless radiation impacts DNA. Genetic damage is a well-established trigger for cancer development. Multiple studies have linked wireless radiation exposure to an increased risk for tumors, including glioblastoma, brain cancer, acoustic neuromas, thyroid cancer, and prostate cancer. Current U.S. regulations for wireless radiation remain outdated, unchanged since 1996, and are only set to protect against overheating, not genetic or health effects. The authors of this study recommend the adoption of a precautionary approach for wireless technologies, including designing devices with lower wireless radiation and antennas that direct emissions away from the body. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., now head of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, has eliminated a major government division studying environmental links to autism while launching a new research initiative focused on vaccines. RFK Jr. has shut down more than 50 federally funded autism research projects, including those exploring workplace chemical exposures, while claiming he will uncover autism's true causes with new studies under his control. Researchers fear the $50 million Autism Data Science Initiative may sideline the investigation of environmental factors and manipulate findings to support Kennedy's long-held but discredited belief linking vaccines to autism. Simultaneously, the Trump administration is rolling back pollution regulations and dismantling federal research infrastructure, including agencies tracking chemicals tied to developmental harm. Scientists have developed a breakthrough food supplement that could help save honeybees from devastating declines by engineering yeast to produce 6 essential sterols found in pollen. Researchers provided bees with a nutritionally complete diet that boosted reproduction up to 15-fold. Unlike commercial substitutes that lack key nutrients, this supplement mimics natural pollen sterol profile, giving bees the equivalent of a balanced diet. Pollinators like honeybees contribute to the production of over 70% of leading global crops. Researchers have developed edible microbeads made from green tea polyphenols, vitamin E, and seaweed that, when consumed, binds to fat in the gastrointestinal tract. Preliminary results from tests with rats fed high-fat diets show that this approach to weight loss may be safer and more accessible than surgery or pharmaceuticals. Human trials are underway. A series of hide-and-seek experiments with a bonobo named Kanzi shows for the first time that apes can mentally keep track of multiple familiar humans at once, even when they are out of sight. Kanzi could also recognize caregivers from their voices alone, an ability never before tested on bonobos. The work led by Johns Hopkins University's Social and Cognitive Origins Group answers key questions about how animals manage to keep track of their group mates and uncovers yet another aspect of human social cognition shared with our closest relatives. When tobacco hornworm caterpillars feel pain, they don't wriggle or try to escape. Instead, according to the latest research, they dial down their pain response by adopting a posture known as the Sphinx state, so called because it resembles an ancient Sphinx statue. Most animals react to pain by standing their ground to defend themselves or by running away. But a research team from Tufts University found that tobacco hornworm caterpillars do the opposite. They curl their head and thorax downward and remain still. It is not clear why. Air pollution from oil and gas is causing 91,000 premature deaths and hundreds of thousands of health issues across the United States annually, with Black, Asian, Native American, and Hispanic groups consistently the most affected. New research published in Science Advances is the first to comprehensively quantify the health impacts of outdoor air pollution across all stages of the U.S. oil and gas life cycle, from extraction to end use, as well as to analyze the associated racial and ethnic disparities in exposure and health burden. Researchers also found that 10,350 preterm births and 216,000 new cases of childhood asthma per year were attributable to oil and gas air pollution, as well as 1,600 lifetime cancers across the U.S. And now the sounds of extinction, the Dornier fir. In a remote area of Coos County, Oregon, a mighty Douglas fir is burning. The tree, known as the Dornier fir, is thought to be between 450 to 500 years old and has lost about 15 meters or 50 feet in height since the fire started on August 16th. The tree previously stood at 325 feet tall, making it one of the world's tallest non-redwood trees before the blaze began. It is still unclear what started the fire, though officials from the Bureau of Land Management have ruled out lightning. The Dornier fir is the only tree ablaze in the area. To put out the fire is no small feat, with aircraft enlisted to drop water onto the tree and drones used to monitor the situation. The remote location of the tree has created another challenge in enabling access for fire crews. On August 21st, the team believed the tree was safe to climb, ascending 280 feet up the trunk and installing a sprinkler. While a drone had previously found no remaining active flames or smoke at the top of the tree, heat has been detected in this part of the trunk, and fire was found to be burning a cavity into the tree. Given the mass of the tree, the team is confident that the fir will not burn down completely, and the investigation into the cause of the fire is still ongoing. And hear the sound of fire.
Broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia. Studio 6, CGSS Video Series, captures high-quality video recordings of live performances.
So, who are you?
With impactful and inspiring artists. as well as engaging conversations with community members about the issues that are most important to their communities. Watch all of the Studio 6 live sessions on CJSF's YouTube page or on our website at cjsf.ca/studio6.